Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. And when the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him.
You make me new. You are making me new. You make me new. You are making me new.
Castellanos is an artist and he's a teacher, and he was with us for those last 2 weeks, and many people went outside with him. And I want to take just a moment to reflect on the time of prayer when we gathered and people were brave, and not only brave to walk in church. For some folks, that in and of itself is a very brave and courageous thing to do, because church has not been a place of healing for too many people. And so they were even more brave and courageous because they came up front and then went outside and they prayerfully painted. And I just want to remind us that what we did to create these two beautiful masterpieces was, first, Eric took these five acrylic colors and some water and some brushes and some plexiglass and said, "Go." Actually, Eric actually really doesn't say much, so he just kind of observed as you all went. And he was present and he was watching over us in love as we prayerfully spent time taking those colors that he had placed on the palette and started to move them around. He would add more water, and then he'd come in afterwards with a blow dryer. And then it turned to this as he took it the other side and painted it, and then we peeled it off. There are so many creative souls in this space who've come together to craft this masterpiece that is here now. The foundation of our time of gathering around the table sits atop the masterpiece that you all have created together. The truth is, though, that most of us, myself included, are convinced that we're not creative. And we actually take pride in this calling to simply admire the creativity of others. And so we place ourselves kind of off on the sideline from the very, very start by thinking that creativity is something that resides in someone else. And isn't it great that I can just admire their gift? It seems, though, that God calls us to a different way of being. And in counterpoint to that reality that so many of us experience in thinking ourselves uncreated, we have dwelled for these 4 weeks in this worship series that we're calling Artisans at the Table. Linda has reminded us that we are works of art and that we're artists at work. That God is a master artist, a central creative who created us to create. God breathed into us our first breaths and says, "You're the one I've been imagining, you and everything you see around you, my beloved creation, and you are good." God creates and calls us to create as well, to create and to craft our futures in God's unfolding love. Though we may create many beautiful works of art, though, the most important work of art to which we'll ever give ourselves is that of our own lives. You're an artist. You were created with an artisan soul. And the question is, what kind of art will you leave behind? This morning, we bring this worship series to a close as we reflect on the masterpiece that God has made us to be and the masterpieces that God longs for us to make of our lives. And we do so by turning to the life of Jesus, a masterpiece whose life was subtle and elegant, brilliant as a work of art. His was a life painted with light and with vivid color. And it was contrasted so harshly with the world around him, a world of empire, a world of deceit, a world that tried to place hope in all things but God. And Jesus, contrasting with that, offered a different way. Another way, what we're calling this series an artisan way. See, to engage the life of Christ is to watch and to witness an artist at work. So we turn this morning to the very first story or miracle that occurs in John's gospel. It's in the second chapter, and Linda shared it with us. And Erwin McManus, who's the author of The Artisan Soul, upon which we've rooted our 4 weeks together around this series, he talks about it this way. So I want to just take us into that story a little bit. It all begins with a wedding. There's a celebration that's taking place. Dancing, drinking, laughter. It's actually nice to reflect just on the notion that Jesus took time for moments just like that, to be with friends, to create community, to be open to where he might be called and led. But it's curious that at this particular wedding, I'm in the midst of like serious wedding season. So I feel like I've done so many weddings and there's so many more weddings that are coming up. And everyone that I've encountered so far, they've all been very organized and structured. They made sure that they had the right number of guests that were coming. They planned ahead. They had wine. They had all of these things all set out. But at this particular wedding, they had no clue as to how many people would be coming or how much wine people would actually drink. At least that's what we're led to believe, because just a little bit into the gathering, there is no more wine. And it's a curious thing on so many different levels. Like, first, Jesus is there hanging out with his mom. And she says, "There's no wine." And he actually seems irritated by this, like frustrated. "Seriously? I have way more important things to do." But I think my mom would have done this to me. She says, "Right, and you're going to do this anyways." So she just kind of like keeps going, like, you've got this in her own way. It's kind of amazing to think about, actually. A God who liberates the poor and frees the oppressed is going to take time in the middle of nowhere in this obscure place out in Cana to say, "I'm actually going to be with the folks, and I long for there to be a little bit more joy and beauty and love and celebration in this particular gathering." Of all the things that God could be working on, of all the miracles that could come first, like healing people, nope, that's not what we find. We find a God who seems on some level deeply interested in the joy and the beauty and the celebration of people finding creative ways of being together as we mark those moments in our lives. And so Jesus turns to the tradition, I think you could say it on one level. There are 6 stone water jars, and these are used by his own Jewish people for washing and cleansing rituals. And they're 20 to 30 gallons. So this is like a CrossFit workout. Go pick up that thing of 20 and 30 gallons, take it down, fill it up with water, and bring it back. So the servants do just that. They fill these large, enormously large jugs of water, and they come back. Everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you've saved the best until now, we learn. There's so much nuance in this moment. See, clearly folks in their day, maybe like in our day, they expected people to bring out the best wine first. And then after everybody's had a couple of glasses, then you can bring out the cheap stuff because no one really is going to know anyways. It's going to be all right. So maybe some things are timeless. Like, it's going to happen in that way, no matter what. But Jesus offers them a totally different way, creating exquisite wine out of water. And Erwin McManus says it this way, like, what can you actually expect of the one who creates the universe after all? The one who speaks light into existence, then goes and creates two buck chuck? Like, no. This is not how God performed that first miracle. See, Jesus took ordinary water and turned it into exquisite wine, revealing to the disciples and to the servants that were there, for those that had eyes to see who Jesus really was. His ministry begins with that extraordinary act, and in it we're invited to wonder about the miracles that God works in our own lives, to see through this abundance and gracious gift a glimpse of the identity and the character of God. Notice, though, not everyone gets it. Not everyone notices what's going on. And it's not just that, wow, in 21st century, we are so modern and wise or postmodern that we understand and we think about miracles in totally different ways than people did so long ago. And we can dismiss them because they just didn't have the scientific revolution and whatever. The steward doesn't think this is happening either. The person who's in charge overseeing the whole thing, if you'll notice, he is trying to figure out some other way to explain this. He starts with what's really rational. Like, you bring the bridegroom and you say, dude, what's up? Like, this was clearly not good planning. Everybody knows what you're supposed to do. You serve the good wine first, but you're serving the best right now. Everything okay? Like, I thought I was on board. I thought I was your chief steward. I was the one in charge and responsible for this. And he misses it. He misses the whole moment. Everything just goes right past him. The disciples, though, and the servants, they're willing to entertain the possibility that the world as they've known it is being broken open as God breaks into it. Not that chief steward, though. He insists that there must be a rational way to explain this. And it's probably rooted in somebody's misunderstanding of hospitality. Let's get this all figured out. He tries to reshape the miracle to fit his own categories. But God continues to turn water to wine in that day and in this day, shattering the boundaries of what we think is the conventional world. God takes masterful care of ordinary people who've lived broken lives and turns our lives into nothing less than masterpieces. I was reminded of water to wine as Linda and I gathered at Old Soul for coffee with the pastors on Wednesday. There were three beautiful folks who gathered there with us. And each one started to share some of their own childhood story, their experience of God and of church, and how they found this little church community. And I was, actually, I was mostly without words as I listened to their stories. Haven't been in a space exactly like that one ever. I've experienced a lot of people who've been hurt by the church, and I've heard many of your stories. But as we sat and stories were shared, each person shared about a church separately. All three were different childhoods. Three separate churches claiming to speak for God that had condemned their very being. One person had been officially excommunicated. One was called in to be officially defellowshipped, But let them know that, thanks, I'm not going to come in for that meeting. But they went through with that process anyways. Another had been shunned. See, they were told that their lives were nothing more than water, and bad water at that. As we sat and we shared stories, what I was reminded of is the vivid colors and the amazing textures that God is not allowing those kind of violent ways to have the final word. Not at that moment, and my prayer is not in any moment, that God continues to turn lives from ordinary water to exquisite wine, no matter who speaking on behalf of God says otherwise. God is making things new and turning lives into nothing less than masterpieces. And I feel blessed to be a part of a church that witnesses to that kind of artisan God. I want to take a moment to unpack what we mean when we say God is an artisan and what we mean when we say we are artisans here at the table. Artisan is usually identified with something that is small and local and intimate. So take bread, for example, artisan bread. There are four basic ingredients to artisan bread. They're simple. You have yeast, you have flour, you have salt, and you have water. As best that I can tell, those ingredients are available to all of us. We could all make artisan bread. Non-artisan bread, in contrast, usually has an abundantly long list of ingredients, most of which you need either a dictionary or a really smart friend to figure out how to pronounce them or what they might possibly be. A defining characteristic of artisan bread is that the ingredients are simple and they're pure and you can pronounce them. And everything goes in that direction toward simplicity. And a second characteristic is the process itself. See, in artisan bread, it is the result of a craft. But in non-artisan bread, the bread is the result of it's a product. And a craft, if you'll bear with me, feels different to me than a product. In artisan bread, you'll never find one loaf that looks exactly like another loaf. They're crafted, and therefore they're always going to have nuance and difference. But in non-artisan bread, it comes through a machine. And they're repressed to look exactly the same. And we know that they're best when they're exactly the same. Our God is an artisan God. And we're called to be artisans here at the table, not mass-produced in which we all think and believe and act the same. No two people created by our artisan God are the same. We're called to create with that same kind of intimacy and simplicity that God creates with. And so we've been doing that here at the table. I think of our ingredients as enormously simple. We root our lives in grace through worship. We grow in faith through kitchen tables, and then we reach in love in our daily lives. It is that simple. It's the way of an artisan. We knead our lives into masterpieces through worship and kitchen tables, and then they rise and they are shared with others as we practice doing no harm and doing good and staying in love with God through Christian disciplines. Over the next 5 weeks, we're going to look together more and more deeply about what that means in our life, what it really looks like. Because the truth is, when you move into those simple things, it's like the beauty of artisanal bread is it just is stunning. And you stay with it. And that's what our process is like. It is both simple and deep at the same moment. We hold those together. I hope you'll join us as we continue to craft our lives into masterpieces in the weeks ahead. I was reminded on Wednesday of just how important it is for a community like this one to be here crafting our lives in God's artisan ways together, because the truth in the reality is a harsh one, just like Jesus faced in his day. The truth in the reality is that too many people have not experienced that kind of simplicity in following the ways of God. They've experienced a God who's trying to hold them down or make them to be a certain way, and the people around them to look and to feel and act in the same way. I believe that it's important to hold and to live into the miracle that God is creating among us in this very place. I believe that water is being turned to wine as people come back to the table and they hear, you hear, I hear, that we are created by a God who calls us to create. God creates masterpieces, and you are a masterpiece. Full stop. You're created by an artisan God to be an artisan, to practice these simple ways of following Jesus. And if you're like me at all, we do our best at that when we do it together with others, when we recognize that it's more difficult to make it on our own, and we trust those around us to be in it with us. As we do that, ordinary folks like you and me start to live and feel a life of extraordinary grace and love. I know some of you were with us when we started worshiping together as the table at Central UMC 4 years ago. A big Sunday, we would have 62 people in worship. Actually, that was a huge Sunday, and we were really, really excited about that. We celebrated that exact moment, and now we gather with so many more people in that space. And there's a simple banner outside that we hung that said, "All means all." And it turns out that so many people in our lives and in our world had not experienced a place that said God's love is for all, that people started to walk through these doors. Experiencing that kind of love turned many people's lives around. It transformed them from water to wine. See, God didn't have to be a warden, and you are not a prisoner, no matter what anyone says on behalf of God. Water to wine. And it's happening all around us. Maybe you noticed you came in this way and you went by the nursery and you saw that Art Beasts, everybody's going to pray for them tomorrow because the state licensing process for preschools is not simple. It is not artisan. It is non-artisan preschool licensing process. And our fabulous directors of Art Beast, Blythe and Bridget, are going to be here tomorrow taking people from the state around to see that. Just a couple weeks ago, that floor was carpeted, and it was bad carpet at that. It needed to be torn up. And now it looks just like that. It's water to wine. It's really simple stuff. You look, it's just a wood floor with rugs and then handcrafted images that you see right up there that our children are learning as they witness and experience the stories of God's tradition through the church, as they gather in a circle to wonder about what it means to follow in Jesus in this day as beloved children of God. And that's our outside space. It's been an eyesore. It really has for a long time. And Art Beast has started, the preschool is called Artenia Beast Academy of Whimsy and Play. Like, how can that not be artisan cool? Like, that is just a really... So they've taken these simple things and they're adding some organic structures to it. So my daughter, like, hardly wants to come inside anymore because she just wants to hang out on this space. This next image is hard to see, but it's like an outdoor kitchen that's stunning. And it's just starting because as God begins to turn water to wine, that process starts to become more and more abundant, and the transformation becomes deeper, and it takes root, and we can't contain it. We can't stop it. Our finance teams and our trustees, they've recently completed the sale of a home that the church owned in River Park. And we've owned the home for many, many years because faithful people who went before us believed and trusted in a God who said people need to experience a place like this in their lives. And so they loved God so much that they invested in that. And we're the beneficiaries of that. And so we've said that the best way for us to steward that is to sell that property and to invest in this facility. Because the truth about this facility is difficult to hear at moments. We need water to be turned to wine in this space. We need it. We need to move those $365,000, because that's just scratching the surface of what needs to happen in this space. Because for many parts of the year, most of this facility is not usable. It's not usable after noon because it turns out in Sacramento it gets hot in the summertime. And then it turns out in the wintertime that it gets cool, and we have a boiler system that has two gears, on and off. So you can imagine how inefficient that is, because you're either cooling or heat. Actually, you're not cooling. You're never cooling. You're either heating or not heating the entire facility at once. So you can imagine how inefficient that is. When we first started to gather here for worship 4 years ago, mostly what I remember is people would make their way. It was a miracle that people made their way in when they were new, because they would find their way down. They'd go through the social hall, down this hall, turn right, come in this side door, and then they would come into the sanctuary. We rarely opened or had the doors, and we didn't have a clear pathway for people to get into the space, for new people to be here. But my guess is, unless you wanted to see what was going on and all the transformations that were happening, most all of you saw a pathway to get into this space. And many of us have been hurt by the church already, so the last thing we need is complications and figuring out how to even get in the door. And so we've worked hard in simple ways these last few years to mark that pathway so that people who long to experience grace and love can do just that. And so one of the things that we're imagining, that our trustees are working on, is to create this space in an even more beautiful way. That as folks come in, not just in the beauty of this sanctuary, but as they begin to walk from placing their bikes, or as they walk up, or as they drive in, that this space embodies the hospitality and the love of God, so that people might see lives transformed in even more radical ways. If you did go this direction through, you saw a social hall. That the wood on that floor is beautiful. It's got tons of potential, and it hasn't been sealed in way, way too long. And if you came in this morning early like I did, if you turn on the lights, first you have to pray that the lights are going to turn on. And then when they do turn on, they don't really light up the space very well. It's nice for mood lighting, but it's not helpful when you actually need to see something. Joan can attest to this. And so we have a team that's working on beautifying that space. They're going to dream and imagine what it could look like so that when someone walks in, their life might be transformed by a place that offers the kind of water to wine hospitality that Jesus makes his first act. We want to be that kind of a community. You might not know it, but every single night during the week, there are folks that are needing recovery who are walking in and going upstairs, and they are living life together to try to stay in it, to hear and to reflect on the grace that God is holding for them so that they can simply make it to the next day. Every night there are recovery groups upstairs doing just that. For us to be the kind of place that offers that healing and hope and possibility, we're going to invest in this facility so that more and more lives can be transformed, so that the space is usable in August after 11:35 in the morning. And so that individual rooms can be heated and cooled so that people can actually be together. Water to wine. Lives transformed, masterpieces conceived, and masterpieces seen again, some of them for the first time. And the truth is, now, like it was back then, not everyone will be on board. Some will follow the way of the master of that banquet. As Linda has shared before, it's easier to criticize, and some of us will fall in that trap and will hold the good wine rather than share it from a place of abundance. Some will say it just won't work. Water can't turn to wine. What is wrong with you? Water to wine. Churches like this one, churches that say God's love is unconditional and all means all, churches like that don't grow. They're not moving pews into the front. They're taking them out and selling them to keep the doors open for the next month. You've clearly got the story wrong. Water is water. Or we could allow our artisan souls to be set free we could just say yes back to a God who has been saying yes always already to you and to you and to every one of you. This is an ordinary place, just like that water. We are an eclectic community. And God is turning water to wine in our midst. There is room at the table, and you are a masterpiece. Our artisan God created you as a masterpiece, and the most important work of art to which you will invest yourself is the life that you live. We are artists, created with artisan souls, and God is a master artist who makes of us masterpieces. What kind of art will you leave behind here at the table? Amen.
Courage, my son, for the Spirit says come, be set free. Every nation under the sun, upon every sea, singing hallelujah, singing set free. Every nation under the sun and upon every sea, sing it set free. Every nation under the sun, upon every sea, singing.